නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Okay, dear venerable brother, dear Dhamma friends, so we are discussing Kajjaniya Sutta, which is available in the connected discourses, that is what you call the Kanda Sanyutta. And there actually Buddha discuss various aspects of how these aggregates are occupying our mind, and he uses a strong word there. It's very much like they are eating the mind, they are eating the consciousness. So basically how it is happening and how these things are very much like harming the mind is something sometimes we can't immediately understand. So we went through the whole sutta and understanding each and every aggregate and how each and every aggregate is occupying the mind, very much like preoccupation or sometimes hindering the mind, occupying the mind, eating the mind, degrading the mind, or have like stains in the mind. Very much like something that we have to abandon. So therefore the one theme of this sutta is that again and again Buddha highlights that the disciple, rather than building up, he is constantly trying to dismantle. Again, rather than clinging, he is very much like trying to abandon. Rather than amassing, he is very much like trying to scatter things. And rather than kindle, he is trying to extinguish. So what he is trying to extinguish, what he is trying to dismantle, what he is trying to abandon, what he is trying to scatter, is nothing but these five aggregates. So whenever we are clinging to any of these aggregates, so that is where we are deluding ourselves, that is where we get burdened, and again that is where the mind get occupied, and ultimately they become very much stored, they become very much occupied, and they become fairly eaten, the mind. So the theme of the sutta is therefore to remove them, abandon them, scatter them, and whatever the burning or agitation happened because of them have to be extinguished. Now we actually have come to the last part of the sutta, and that is where the bhikkhu has completed that. That is where whoever the practitioner has completed that task. That basically means that he is now an arahant. Now with respect to an arahant, Buddha mentioned it differently. So he mentioned this is called bhikkhus a noble disciple who neither builds up nor dismantles, but who abides having dismantled. Now, he was continuously doing this dismantling process. So whenever they are trying to build up, whenever these aggregates are trying to build up, so he was vigilant, he was mindful, and he is trying to dismantle them. And now that process has completed. Now he has completed that process. So he already done that task. Who abides having dismantled. So he completed that successfully. Now he doesn't want to do anything at all because the task is done. He doesn't have to build it up or doesn't have to dismantle when there is nothing built up. So there is nothing to dismantle. So he already continued the dismantling process. Now it is completed. Similarly, Buddha mentioned who neither abandons nor clinging, but who abides having abandoned. Now, whenever mind habitually habitually clung to something, now he was vigilant, the mindfulness has indicated him. As a result of that, he was able to abandon that. So this abandoning process, this letting go process has continued for a fair amount of time. So as a result of that, now he has completely abandoned the thing, completely let go of things. So there is nothing remains in the mind. So as a result of that, now he has nothing to abandon because nothing is clung to. There is nothing grasped. So he simply completed this abandoning process. So he just remained calm, quiet, still. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned, who neither scatters nor amasses, but who abides having scattered. So very much like the same theme continues, where Buddha mentioned, now previously, whenever we are identifying with any kind of an aggregate, suppose we are recognizing this is my body. So with respect to that feeling, with respect to that identification, so much of other thoughts may come to the mind, so much of other perceptions come to the mind, feelings comes to the mind. So it's a kind of an amassing of different aggregates. Whenever we cling to one aggregate, the other aggregates also start supporting it. So it's very much like building up. But now he continuously saw that process, noticed that process, and he, rather than promoting that process, he started scattering that process. Now that scattering has completed. Now no more amassing happens, no more building up happens, so there is nothing to scatter. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned, who neither extinguishes nor kindles, but who abides having extinguished. Now we know the defilements, raga, dosa, moha, lust, hatred and delusion, are the main roots contributing to burn the mind, agitate the mind, kindle the mind. Now the process that the practitioner is going through is nothing but recognizing these defilements and slowly allowing them to pass away, allowing them to cease. So whenever a defilement arises in the mind, he noticed that using mindfulness, he understood it, he kept it under supervision or kept it under the mindfulness. He didn't panic about it, he didn't get agitated about it, he didn't get deluded by that, but keep it aside. Notice that, observe that. So as a result of that, the trend or the potential of that defilement become weaker and weaker. So this process has continued again and again. It is not just once that we can completely eradicate a particular defilement. Whenever it is surfaced up, so we need to recognize it and notice it, acknowledge it, and without attached to it or getting deluded by that, we have to maintain a kind of a distance observation. As a result of that, that particular trend, that habitual tendency has weakened, and as a result of that, it gets seized. So ultimately, when we repeat this process again and again, so the defilements are getting weaker and weaker and ultimately completely uprooted. So now this practitioner has completed that process, so there is no more defilements available, so there is nothing therefore to further extinguish. He has completed the extinguishing process. So whenever anger arisen, there could be a little agitation, there could be a little burning, so that has been extinguished again and again. Whenever lust arisen in the mind, so he noticed that there's a little burdening, there's a little burning, there's a little, say, kindling going on, and he noticed that and he slowly calmed it down. He continued that process. Now everything very much like a fire completely extinguished, there is nothing remains, no more flames, so there is no more extinguishing is needed. So that's why Buddha mentioned here, he neither extinguishes nor kindles, but who abides having extinguished. Now all these are with respect to aggregates that he completed, and now if we consider a little bit more detail about this process, so there is a beautiful sutta that you all are familiar with that is called the Bahya Sutta, where Buddha mentioned or basically preached a very short discourse to Bahya in the Udana, and there he mentioned very interesting instruction to Bahya with respect to restrainment. Probably you have heard about the story that Bahya thought that he is an arahant, and then one of his previous friend, now who is a celestial being, understood his thought, and he know that he is not an arahant. So out of compassion, he appeared in front of him, and he mentioned that you are not an arahant, and you are not even in the path of the arahanthood. And then Bahia asked, who is the arahant? Where can I know, from whom that I can know the path to arahanthood? Then that celestial being actually informed Bahia, there is one recluse called Gautama, who is currently in the Shravasti, and he is the arahant. And he is showing the correct path to arahanthood. So you better meet him. So inspired Bahia, so he immediately left Supparaka, where he was, and then reached the Buddha, and he again and again pleaded Buddha to preach him Dhamma. And actually at that moment Buddha was going on alms round, so he denied teaching at that time. You know, during the alms round, so the monks are not allowed to talk, not allowed to preach, and so Buddha is following the same. So even when Bahia invited, so Buddha very much like reluctant to teach. For the second time Bahia pleaded, Buddha was reluctant to plead. And the third time Bahia was requesting, and that time Buddha started preaching because the listener is so enthusiastic, and he's very much like Buddha might have seen that he doesn't have much lifespan. So that could be another reason that Buddha started preaching. And Buddha explained him, Ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamastam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. Now this is the very advanced kind of restrainment that one has to follow. Ditte dittamattam bhavissati. So in the scene, that's it. Just scene is only. So you are not going beyond that, you are not going thinking about it, you are not allowing to occupy the sight, occupy the mind by the sight. Rather, you keep the mind tranquil, you keep the mind unaffected, even though you have seen. Similarly, you have heard, that's it. There is no more proliferation, there is no more thought processes, mind remains calm. But you have seen, you have heard. Similarly, through the nose, through the tongue, through the body, one has sensed something. Maybe an odor, maybe a flavor, maybe a tangible object. And it is being sensed. But that's all. There is no more further thinking process continues. There is no more mental proliferation, conceptual proliferation continues. So rather, mind remains calm. Now this is, if we go to the other part, the vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati, that is where probably a kind of a mental object appeared in the mind, and the person has cognized that, so he has noticed that. Now afterwards there is no more further proliferation, so mind remains calm, mind remains tranquil, and that particular mental object might have passed away. So this is, in a way, the advanced kind of training, advanced kind of restrainment that one has to follow. So Buddha immediately mentioned this restrainment, advanced restrainment, to Bahia. So that indicates that Bahia has fair amount of understanding, and he already gained some practice, some skill. So the Buddha was able to directly bring him to this level. And in the Buddha Sasana, he is the foremost in the understanding of Dhamma, in the quick understanding. Now, once that is done, so that restrainment is completed, so then Buddha mentioned, so when you are capable of doing that, if you consider the seeing, so you are not in that seeing, not in that sight, you are not gone into it. You are not making a self with respect to that particular sight. And again, you are not making a self at the observer side. And again, you are not making a self in between. Similarly, when you have heard something, you are not making a self based on what you have heard, and again you are not making a self based on the hearing process or kind of a person who is listening, or you are not making a self in between. Similarly, when you have sensed something, it could be an odor, it could be a flavor, it could be a tangible, so you are not manifested there at the outside edge. That is at the odor level, that is at the flavor, or at, that is at the sensation level. Similarly, you are not thinking that I am tasting, or I am experiencing, I am sensing. So there is no I making at this end either, and there is no in between either. And whenever a mental object appeared in the mind, you are not identifying with that particular mental object. You are not making a self out of that object. And similarly, you are not thinking that I am observing, I am experiencing, I am thinking. That part is also not there, and there is no anything in between. And Buddha mentioned this is the end of suffering. Now this is in a way very brief, concise teaching delivered to Bahir, and this is something that Vipassana practitioners may slowly go through. As much as possible, one has to abide by this kind of a teaching. One has to practice one has to direct one's practice with respect to this kind of a teaching. So it is not immediately that we won't be successful, but the indication is here, the guideline is here, that one has to have that kind of a completely free mind. There is no I making happens at the external end. It doesn't happen at the internal end. It doesn't happen in between. So completely free from I making, mind making, self making. And on the other hand, there is another interesting sutta called Sandha Sutta. So there Buddha actually explained how one is continuing one's practice without getting identified at any level. Now this is a very interesting sutta available in the I think in Anguttara Nikaya. So where Buddha mentioned eva meva ko sandha bhadro purusa janiyo aranyagatopi rukkamulagatopi sunyagaragatopi na kamaraga pariyuttitena chetasa viharati na kamaraga paryetena uppannassa cha kamaragassa nissaranam yathabhutam pajanati. Na kamaraga paryetena uppannassa cha kamaragassa nissaranam yathabhutam pajanati. Now he is just continuing the practice, started with the kind of a vipassana process. There Buddha mentioned that particular practitioner, now addressed to Venerable Sandha. And Buddha mentioned he may be sitting in the forest, maybe under a root of a tree. And now, na kamaraga pariyuttitena chetasa viharati. Now, you know that the mind can get occupied various lustful thoughts, various sensual desires. Now, this particular practitioner is trying to keep his mind free from any of these sensual desires. Now, that is coming, that we can connect even to the Kajjaniya Sutta. So, whenever we are thinking any kind of object, suppose it is a beautiful, pleasurable object, so slowly we start having kind of a signs about it, marks about it, various perceptions about it. Now, some pleasurable feelings are arising. Now, further thoughts are going on, further thinking going on, further fabrications going on. We are adding our own likes and dislikes onto it. Now the mind gets established, consciousness established. So that basically means we are accumulating the aggregates. We are developing or very much like building up the aggregates. But on the other hand, so when one notices that sensual desire arisen in the mind and keep abandoning that, letting it go without promoting it, or without fabricating it, without getting deluded by that. So again, mind become calm, clean, clear. So no further building up happens. So that is what even here happen. Whenever a sensual desire is there, available, arisen, so Buddha mentioned, so this particular practitioner keep abandoning that. And uppannassa kamarāgassa nissaraṇaṁ yathā bhūtaṁ pajānāti. Now he know where to put his mind. So when sensual desire has arisen, where to very much like establish his mind, rather than, I mean, not only abandoning, where to keep the mind again. So that is where we can say kind of the temporary release. So the practitioner has already recognized kind of a release state of the mind, free state of the mind, even though it is temporary. So again and again he is trying to abide by that temporary release. Where there is no eye making, there is no mind making, there is no grasping, there is no establishment of the consciousness, even though it is temporary. Now he knows this as the refuge. He is using that as the refuge. Now similarly Buddha mentioned, na vyapada pariyuttitena chetasa vihirati. Now whenever some sort of anger arisen in the mind, sort of a hatred arisen in the mind, resentment arisen in the mind, the similar process he has to continue. He needs to notice it, recognize it, and have kind of a distance observation, let it calm down and let it go, and now you are resting. Again, your mind is very much established on that temporary freedom. So this process has to be continued again and again. So same thing Buddha mentioned to other defilements, other hindrances. And interestingly, so the interesting statement in this sutta is, he mentioned, so neva pataving nissaya jahayati. Now he continues his practice, but not establish on the earth element. The apang nissaya jahayati, not establish on the water element. The tejang nissaya jahayati, not establish in the heat element. The vayang nissaya jahayati, not establish in the air element. The akasanan chayatanan nissaya jahayati. So that means his mind is not established in the infinite space. So that is the, you can say, the fifth jhana, the first arupa jhana. Na vinyānānchāyatanān nissāya jahāyati, not established on the infinite consciousness. Na ākinchānyāyatanān nissāya jahāyati, not established on the nothingness. Na nevasānyāyatanān nissāya jahāyati, not established in the neither perception nor non-perception. Na idhalokāṁ nissāya jahāyati, his mind is not established anything in this world. Na paralokāṁ nissāya jahāyati, his mind is not established in anything with respect to another world. Yampitang dittang sutam mutang vinyatam pattam pariyesitam anuvicharitam manasa thampi nissaya na jahayati. Now again kind of a general term. So there are things that can be seen, there are things that can be heard, there are things that can be sensed through the nose, tongue, body. There are things that can be cognized through the mind. And there are things that you can even investigate, explore through the mind. Tampi nissaya na jahayati. And he is not making his mind establish any of these. He is continuing his practice, by the way. Tampi nissaya na jahayati. Jahayati cha pana. But he is continuing the practice. He is developing kind of a jhana, but not with respect to any of the elements, not with respect to any of the arupa realms or arupa jhana, and similarly with not with respect to any of what is cognized, sensed, heard or seen. Now evam jahayancha pana sanda bhadrang purisajaniyang Sainda Deva Sabrahmaka Sapajapatika Arakava Namasanti. Now this is same mentioned in the Kajaniya Sutra, where Buddha mentioned, so this particular bhikkhu, even though now he is continuing his practice, but his mind is not established at any place. You can see not in the Rupa realm, not in the Rupa Jhana, not in the Arupa Jhana, and not whatever the things that he is cognized through any of the faculties to the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So none of those objects coming through those senses are his object of meditation. He's not using any of those objects as his object of meditation. In other terms, his mind is very much like objectless. There is no particular object of meditation. He's trying to keep his mind completely free, unattached, unassociated. Now, in the Kajjaniya Sutta, so this process has completed by the Arahant. So there are Buddha mentioned for this particular Arahant, whenever he is being noticed or being venerated by the other gods, other celestial beings, other Brahmans, so they can't recognize the object of meditation. So probably the certain celestial beings, so whenever they are doing some sort of an investigation to another person, maybe a worldling, so immediately they can recognize what this particular person is thinking, because his thinking process has some kind of an object. Suppose that you are quite fortunate to encounter by a celestial being. Now this has happened, say, to many venerables during the Buddha's time. Certain things are recorded. And suppose they are thinking about a particular subject. Now even just now we discussed the Bahya Sutta. So just before Bahya become an Arahant, that he was thinking that he is an Arahant and he is already in the path to enlightenment and something like that, he was thinking. And that is being noticed by one of his previous celestial being, previous friend. He was a previous friend of Bahya, and now he is a celestial being, and he immediately noticed that. That means that particular celestial being can notice the reflection of Venerable Bahya. So that is where Venerable Bahya's mind is established somewhere. His thought process can be noticed. His thought process can be recognized. But on the other hand, the point here, what Buddha highlights, is that when an Arahant is in his released mind, so his thought process, where his mind established, is unnoticeable, not noticeable. So as a result of that, these Brahmas, celestial beings, become so inspired, and on the other hand, they could have even become perplexed, because they can't notice the establishment of the mind of this particular Arahant. So their respect become more and more. So as a result of that, now they are respecting this Arahant, mentioning Namo te purisajanya, namo te purisuttama, yasate nyabi jahanama, yampi nisaya jahayati. So Buddha mentioned, homage to you, O thoroughbred man, homage to you, O highest among men. We ourselves do not directly know, dependent upon what you meditate. Now, these are very interesting areas in a way that we can explore. So, now even though he is continuing with his practice, his mind is not established anywhere. So, any others can't notice any of the object. As a result of that, they can't trace the mind of the Arahant. Now, let me now come to another area. Now, Buddha explained this state of consciousness as unestablished consciousness or unmanifested consciousness. Now, you know, when we were discussing consciousness aggregate, one of the function of the consciousness is to select and get established on that particular selected object. Say, for example, if there are many people around you, suppose you have noticed your son, your daughter, your mother, your father, so immediately your mind gets established there, you recognize that person, you have your own likes and dislikes about him, and now you are being attracted to that particular person, and now your mind is involved there. Consciousness gets established, deeply rooted, drawn there, and even can lead to attachment, grasping, clinging, etc., etc. Now, this is the one function of consciousness. When there are many things available and you may select one thing, and as a result of that mind get established, now you have kind of a dichotomy. Here I am and there you are. So that kind of a division happens because of this consciousness, when the consciousness get established. Now that happens throughout our lifetime, throughout our day. Say whenever we see something, whenever we hear something, whenever we go through some sort of odor, when we experience some kind of a taste, flavor, or tangible, or even when a thought happens to the mind. So we are able to distinctly recognize, we notice it, we give some prominence to it, we give a value to it, and now mind gets established there. But on the other hand, when mind is not established, when one's mind is at least experiencing some kind of a temporary freedom, so at that time, even though you see things, your mind is not getting occupied by what you have seen. So that is where ditte ditta mattang bhavissati. So seeing is there, but mind remains calm. Mind was able to sustain its clarity. Mind was able to sustain its purity without it is being affected by what you have seen. Similarly, whenever you are hearing some things, so those what you have heard is incapable of penetrating into the mind and disturbing it and occupying the mind. So mind remains calm. Whenever you sense kind of an odor, whenever you sense some sort of smell, taste, and any kind of other tangible, the same process, you may notice it, but they can't penetrate into the mind and overwhelm the mind, occupy the mind, disturb the mind. Mind remains calm. When a thought happens even in the mind, so it may simply notice, it may let go of, but it can't disturb the mind, it can't occupy the mind. Mind may not go into conceptual proliferation. Now, at that moment we can say, where the mind is established? It is nowhere. Basically, mind is not established anywhere. So that is why it is called appatittita vijnana, unestablished consciousness. And on the other hand, in that mind, nothing is being shown. That mind is not occupied by anything. As a result of that, so it is very much like empty. Now, if you can remember last time we took a simile given by Katukurunde Jnananda Bante, that the process of entanglement of consciousness with the name and form is very much like what happened in a theater. So when a very pure white color screen is available, it is right now not visible because the theater is completely dark. And when the projector projects some kind of image onto it, now it gets illuminated and that image is now appearing in the screen. So we as the spectators get attracted to that particular image, whatever the scene, and we immediately go to a kind of imaginary world, whatever depicted by that particular image, and we are there. We are manifested somewhere else. Now, not in the theater. Even though we are sitting on a chair, we forget it. Even though we are seeing a movie, we forget it. And something imaginary has become real to us. So, same thing happens in our mind. So, when the consciousness is occupied by some kind of a name and form, so that name and form appear very real, quite valuable, quite important. So we give more prominence to it and we get attracted to it. We think it is the true thing. And ultimately consciousness fully get occupied by that name and form and we are there. We are completely overwhelmed by that. But on the other hand, if this consciousness is empty, it doesn't have any kind of a name and form to represent. Consciousness remain completely pure. We can call it as pure consciousness. We can call it as unmanifested consciousness. And this consciousness is not established anywhere. So that's why it is called unestablished consciousness. And since it is not manifest, I mean, there is nothing manifested there, it is called unmanifested consciousness or anidassana vijnana. So in the another sutta available in Diganikaya, Kevadda Sutta, so Buddha gave another explanation to this arahant's consciousness. Vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbato pabham etta apocha patavi tejo vayo nagadati etta digancha rassancha anunthulang subasubam etta namancha rupancha asesang uparujjati vijnanasa nirodhena ette tang uparujjati. Now this is a very advanced kind of a statement, explanation Buddha is giving to this arahant's consciousness. Vijnanam anidassanam. So in this particular unestablished consciousness, anantam sabbato pabam. So it is unlimited and it is luminous. There is no defilements at all. It's completely pure. Etta apoja patavi tejo vayo nagadati. All four elements are not find footing there. So there is no even slightest stain coming from these elements, coming from all the different kinds of, say, physical world, is find footing in this particular consciousness. Now, if we consider our own consciousness, say you have seen your car, you have seen your children, you have seen your parents, you have seen many stories, you have seen your, say, through the, say, internet, say, through the newspapers, through the TV, many things we have seen with respect to the physical world. And some kind of fragments of thoughts or fragments of images may occupy the mind. And they coming as memory to the mind. And those different images, time to time, occupy the mind. They appear in the mind. So on the other hand, they find footing in our mind. But in the arahant consciousness, it is not there. But he is still living in this world. That's the beauty. He may eat, he may talk, he may see something, and he may go on arms round, and he may maintain his life. But whatever he has associated in the physical world, those segments, those fragments of memories, or the whatever seen, heard, etc., nothing find footing in his mind. And further Buddha mentioned, etta digancha rassancha anunthulang subasubang etta namancha rupancha asesang uparujjati. Now, whenever mind is free from any of those elementary segments, so there is no any kind of dualistic kind of understanding, whether it is good, whether it is bad, whether it is beautiful, whether it is ugly, whether it is short, whether this is long, whether this is large, whether this is small. So these are quite relative terms. What we are making with respect to all these elements. So when elements does not find footing in the mind, so all those subjective terms, terminologies, concepts that we are talking are completely absent. And further Buddha mentioned, namancha rupancha asesang uparujyati. So the name and form, previously, name and form is the one sort of tempting the mind, tempting the consciousness, entangling the mind. But now, name and form is completely uprooted. Vijnanasa nirodhena ette thang uparujjati. Now, here vijnana is the typical established consciousness. So, that establishment of the consciousness is completely ceased. No more established consciousness is generated. Say, for example, when we are seeing something through the eyes, so if that is quite attractive, our consciousness being attracted there and it is being established there. Now we can call it the eye consciousness well established on what we have seen. So that process is completely absent now. So the eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and the mind consciousness, which are the established consciousnesses, and those are not there, and those are completely ceased. Vijnanasa nirodhena ette tang uparujati. All those are now completely ceased, completely uprooted. So the mind is completely freed, consciousness is completely freed, not established anywhere. And it doesn't manifest, anything doesn't manifest there. And any physical sight, sound, smells, taste, tangibles does not find any footing. The mental images with respect to any of those physical things does not find any footing in this particular consciousness. Now, another question comes, how this person live in the world? Now, this is another interesting question. Now, when an arahant is available and he has to live in this world, so how he is going to live? That is also actually asked by certain people from the Buddha, and Buddha has beautifully answered that. And Buddha mentioned, this is available in the Arahanta Sutta. So Buddha mentioned, Yohoti bhikkhu arahan katavi kinasavo antima dehadari. Ahang vadami tipi sovadeya, mamang vadanti tipi sovadeya. Loke samanyang kusalo viditva, vohara mattena so vohareya. Now here, one deva, celestial being, come to the Buddha, approach the Buddha, and he asked, now, these arahants also refer that I have mentioned, I have talked. Or else sometimes they mention, they talk to me, he talked to me. Now, this is very much like a conventional talking of a worldly person. So why these arahants are using like that? So that's the question asked by this celestial being. Then the Buddha answered him, telling him, Yohoti bhikkhu arahan katavi. Now this particular monk who is an arahant, kinasavo antima dehadhari. He has completely uprooted all the taints and he is having the last birth. This is last birth. Ahang vadami tipi so vadeya. And he is, as you have mentioned, he is referring that I have told, I have mentioned, I have stated. Mamang vadanti tipi so vadeya. And he is also referring as he told me, she told me. So that is being mentioned like that, talk like that. Loke samanyang kusalo viditva vohara mattena so vohariya. And he fully understood the convention of the world. He fully understood the language of the world, the typical communication of the world, and he is skillfully using it. That's it. Loke samanyang kusalo viditva vohara mattena. He is using it for mere communication. That is nothing more than that. He doesn't feel that he is there. He doesn't feel that I am here, even though he refers like that. There is no any conceptual proliferation within him, even though he is using these concepts skillfully. Now further, the same deva further ask, now is he handling this because of conceit? Because when someone is referring that I am talking and he talked to me, so that indicates some sort of I am conceit, asmimana, within his mind. So this particular celestial being is asking now, is this reference, is this conventional talking, does it indicate any kind of remaining conceit within him? Then Buddha said no. Buddha mentioned, pahina manasa na santi gantha. Vidhupita mana gantasa sabbe. So viti vatto manyanang sumedo ahang vadami tipiso vadeya mamang vadanti tipiso vadeya loke samanyang kusalo viditva vohara mattena so vohariya. So Buddha mentioned here with respect to the conceit, so this particular arahant, he is using the typical terminology, typical conventional words, he talked to me, I talked to him, or he, I have preached Dhamma, And I have listened Dhamma, whatever that conventional terminology he is using, Pahina Manasa, without any conceit. And for the one who is free from conceit, there is no any kind of mental entanglements. And Vidhupita Mana Gantasa Sabbe. So he has abandoned all those entanglements available in the mind. No more entanglements. So Vitivatto Manjanang Sumedo. So he is now a very wise person. He has abandoned all conceptual proliferation. Manjanang. Manjanang means I with respect to I, with respect to I am, there is a different kinds of concealment, different kinds of thought proliferation. So in this particular wise person, there is no such proliferation at all. So he is still referring, still using the terms I, me, mine, etc., but for mere communication. He doesn't identify with that. He doesn't go to any conceptual proliferation with respect to those terms. He is skillfully using the language. So this is how Buddha answered that celestial being. So with that, actually, we can understand, even though arahants are fully maintaining unestablished consciousness, his mind is completely pure, he can still have the freedom to use a language. He still have the ability to live with the other people without any problem. So these are very interesting things that we can learn from Kajjaniya Sutta. I think we have discussed fairly this Kajjaniya Sutta for several weeks now. So with that note, I like to conclude Kajjaniya Sutta, this series. And now I open the session for questions. Jennifer, are you sleeping?
Oh, Bhante, I didn't hear you say we're finished with the Dhamma talk.
Okay. So I finished the Kajjaniya Sutta series and the Dhamma talk also.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So now we'll proceed to the Q&A portion. If you'd like to ask a question, please raise your hand, or you may also send them via the chat.
So, no question. Joseph is there.
Okay. I'd like to invite Joseph. You may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Yes, how are you?
Thank you. Thank you very well. Thank you very much. Okay. That was wonderful, the sutta. So my question, do you think it is humanly possible to attain arahantship? Is it something that is an ideal?
No.
Is it something that we today as people today can really aspire to as like an actual thing that we can accomplish in this life?
Yeah, actually, very rare, the arahants available in the world today, but it is not something impossible. So that is what Buddha mentioned. If someone is following for satipatthanas, if someone is following his teaching closely, so this world is not empty of arahants. So that's a statement categorically Buddha has mentioned. So therefore, we can't say the world is empty of arahants. So there may be arahants available even today. And that's why it is encouraged to develop the path. And the point is that they may not come forward and mention that I am an arahant, and pay respect to me, something like that. So it's very unlikely that the genuine arahants would say like that, because the I conceit has completely uprooted. So there is no any advertisements therefore, and there is no any self display or showing off, because all these advertisements show off and trying to show the presence is coming because of our I conceit. So when we think that I am here, I am a person, I am an individual, I am special. So that indicates the remaining ignorance we have, the remaining I conceit we have. But the Arahant, on the other hand, is completely free from that. So when that is absent in that particular person, in that Arahant, so he may live like a normal person without showing off. So that could be another reason that why we can't hear telling that I am an Arahant from the genuine Arahants, because there is no any conceit within them. And on the other hand, there are still the people who have accomplished maybe the stream winning, maybe the second, that is the Sakadagami or Anagami. So those are, there are still indications available in the world. So, but as you mentioned, that someone is telling that I am an Arahant is very, unlikely if they are really genuinely right. Arahants, yes.
Because it seems so, it seems so unlikely to accomplish such a task.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems so difficult. And it seems so impossible to get to that. One of the things that I guess playing the devil's advocate, why this would be impossible,
uh-huh.
it would seem, is in part one has to live in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So how would one go about then would one, in order to be an Arahant, have to be a mendicant monk?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be the only possible way? Would it be possible for a lay person to accomplish such a task and have to have a living, maintain a home? Those kind of seem like they would be in conflict. I guess that's where it seems to me kind of like an ideal rather than something that might actually could be done.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So actually, if we consider today's world, actually we are being bombarded with so much of information, so much of simulations. So those are very intense. So therefore, it could be more difficult for us if we consider with respect to the people who were in the Buddha's time, because the Buddha's time and the later, the things are very simple, and their sense faculties therefore could maintain some amount of clarity, because it is not intense stimulation happen like today. But today actually intense stimulation is there, and with the technological advancement, so we are so much attracted towards them, and that could be one strong reason that why we can't do it. But on the other hand, even layperson, so having understood the danger, so there is no difficulty in doing that, because I know there are many people even in Sri Lanka, so they are not watching movies, they are not watching even a TV, and they don't have a TV, television, because they understood, the danger of that, because they are so attractive and they're being attracted to that, and mind get occupied. So as a restrainment, they are not using a television. So likewise, there are still, lay people, even though they are leading a lay life, so they maintain kind of a monk's life. They maintain some kind of a secluded life, because they understood this extreme stimulation comes through the media and comes through various other means. And they may go to a shop and all these things just to get what is necessary. But maintaining a very basic life, what is essential, without reaching out for so much of luxuries. And there are people doing like that. There are many people, not just one or two, that there are many who are doing that because they understood the problem. And for them, I feel it is still possible. So they are, say, they are participating into meditation retreats, they are listening to Dhamma, they are dedicated their life to this understanding. So therefore, it is impossible to say that it is completely not possible today. It is not true. But on the other hand, there are people who are leading such kind of a spiritual life and they understood the danger of the extreme stimulation. And as a result of that, they are slowly calming down senses, restraining senses, improving their Dhamma understanding and trying to protect the mind, the clarity of the mind. So likewise, the purification process may continue. So as you know, it's a kind of a gradual purification. So when one understood the Sotapanna, that state, so slowly he may further consolidate that state by enhancing his understanding. Now the Dhamma may be more clear to him. Now further, with that further understanding, he may continue the practice. Now suppose that he is further weakening the defilements and he becomes a Sakadagami, the once returner. And his understanding may further improve and he further dwell according to the Dhamma, and now suppose he is becoming an Anagami, non-returner, and his mind may be further, say, pure. So likewise, he may see the path more clearly. And so likewise, the process is continuing. So, and even the Buddha mentioned in certain suttas, Dhammavadhamme abhisandeti, Dhammavadhamme paripureti, apara parangamanaya. So this is in the Anguttara Nikaya, Buddha mentioned. So the Dhammas may come towards the Dhamma to fulfill that Dhamma. Now, even though we do our practice as an individual, I am practicing, I want to become a Sotapanna, I want to practice. So like that is how we have the ambition. But as we continue, so that mind making may become less and less, but the Dhammas start to operate within ourselves. So the supporting Dhammas, supporting facilities, whatever the supports, may also come towards the practitioner because the genuine practice is going on. So the Dhamma is operating. So therefore, in that sense, we can say, yes, things are happening, but might be less with respect to the Buddha's time. But I mean, the opportunities is still available. Therefore, many people are in the path, many people are practicing. So that is a good sign.
Well, that's very inspiring. I appreciate hearing that very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Okay. Everyone's
happy. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you can hear me or not, but
yeah. So there's another question coming from our Venerable Sudhira. So he's here. Yeah.
It's more of a comment, Bhante.
Yeah.
So an example of a layperson who lives that life and has a very powerful meditation practice because of it.
Yeah.
Would be someone like Delson Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wears lay clothing and things, but he doesn't work for money. He lives off of generosity of others. He just teaches Dhamma and meditates and learns the suttas.
Mm-hmm.
He has a kapya and everything. And he lives very free that way.
Exactly.
So away from sensual pleasures, away from family life and kids and bondages.
Correct.
But still not in the robes. So
correct. Yeah.
But I have heard that he would like to ordain.
So actually there's another comment coming from Venerable Sudhira. So actually there are teachers who are leading meditation retreats, and they are not using money. They are completely depending on the generosity of the others. One example is Delson Armstrong. So he lives in USA. So he's a meditation teacher and he speaks some deep Dhamma, and not doing any kind of sensual pressure related activities. Rather, depending on the generosity of the others, he continue to teach Dhamma. And so likewise, there are such teachers, Dhamma teachers, practitioners who are advancing their practice and living according to the Dhamma. Now even during the Buddha's time, Actually, Buddha mentioned about the Gatikara. Gatikara is an anagami, non-returner. Actually, before our Buddha, the previous Buddha was the Buddha Kassapa. So at that time, Gatikara has become the main supporter of the Buddha Kassapa, and he is an non-returner. He's an anagami. So the way of life he lived is very interesting, and he actually prepares the pots. But he doesn't do any kind of a business with the pots. Rather, he keeps his pots outside, and whoever like, they can take the pots, and as an exchange, they can keep something useful. Say, they are some person may take a pot, and as an exchange, he's keeping some amount of rice. Another person takes a pot, and he keeps another valuable, whatever it is. So this is how he is maintaining his life, even protecting the blind parents. So likewise, say non-returners, so since they are completely free from any sensual desire, even though they are living in the typical world, there may be kind of a change in their lifespan or lifestyle with respect to other people. So they may live a very simple life, basic life, not into much of an advertisement, not into much of showing off, maybe not into big kind of a business, but living a very exemplary life. So there are people like that even today, and they are leading a very spiritual life. So therefore we can't say that the whole world is rid of any of these spiritual people, and still I feel that the potential is available, and people are, even amidst all these difficult situations, people are leading in that side. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bende. I'd like to invite Darshika for the next question. Darshika, you may unmute. Can you hear me, Bante?
Yes, we can hear you.
There's a small question, Bante. Just want to find out, when you're in this unestablished consciousness, do you go into jhana?
That's another interesting question. Now, so in the statement that we referred in the Sandha Sutta, so Buddha mentioned the consciousness of the Arahant is not established on the Patavi. Not established on the Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, not established in the, say, Akasananchayatana, Vinyananchayatana, Akinchanyayatana, Nevasanyana, Nasanyayatana. So in other terms, it is not established on the typical jhana. Now, typically, when we are talking about jhana, it is very much like the consciousness is associated with the such kind of qualities pertaining to that particular jhana. But this is, we can call it differently. We can call it kind of noble jhana or whatever it is. So there are the important factor is mind is not fairly corrupted by the qualities of that particular jhana. Rather, mind is able to maintain its purity. So that's why Buddha particularly mentioned in that sutta, patavin nissaya jahayati. Now if you consider the first jhana, if one is using a kasina, patavi kasina for that, so mind become completely colored by the patavi kasina. So even now here the patavi apo tejo vayo, we can consider as the four first jhanas where one is using as an one example. So they are the typical practitioner. So whenever they attain first jhana, so if he is using patavi kasina for that, the kasina completely has colored his mind. But on the other hand, maybe the arahant may continue his jhanic practice, but his mind is not established there. So there are, in a way, we can call that it's a kind of a different kind of jhana he may be continuing. Where in the previous case, when a worldly person going through jhana, so the mind is established thoroughly on the with the object. But here, the mind is not established there at all.
So you can get where you you fall asleep and still get wake up, and you are in the unestablished consciousness, or you're always you don't fall asleep and you're 100% aware of what you see.
No, actually, even Buddha has slept. Now you see, during the Buddha's time, now if we consider his daily routine, so it is mentioned that typically Buddha slept for 2 hours. So that means he is sleeping. So we can't say that while he is sleeping, maybe while he is sleeping also his mind is not established anywhere. So that could be more reasonable to say, because we can't say while sleeping his mind is established in a particular place. Even while sleeping, his mind is not established, but the body is taking the complete rest and mind is completely resting also. And even the daytime, since the mind is not established and mind is remaining or maintaining its restful state, so he might not feel kind of tiresome, because there is no tiring factors, those are the defilements available in the mind. So that's why the body only needs the fair amount of rest. So that is why Buddha may have to sleep. Other than that, the mind is already restful.
Also, Bhante, is there a value in going beyond 1 hour, over 1 hour doing the meditation? Is there any value if you can stay on to go on till you get bored?
There may be advantages and there may be disadvantages as well. That we need to see depending on the situation. Say while you are continuing your practice, suppose that you are at the beginning, your mind is little scattering, wandering, and slowly you are building up mindfulness, and now mindfulness is well established.
If you are going into the anidasana state, we are temporary moments of free empty space.
Uh-huh.
Then if you can stay, is it worthwhile to go longer?
Right. Definitely. That depends. That's what I want to tell you. Now, when one achieves this temporary freedom, when one achieves this, a mind which is free from any attachment, so one needs to, get used to that. So one has to further and further enhance that, so that one can maintain that for a long time. Say at the beginning, it may be only for a short time, maybe 5 minutes. But 5 minutes is not enough. So you need to enhance it to 10 minutes. You need to further enhance it to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 1 hour. So likewise, you have to consolidate that. Now the mind become fairly familiar with that state. And now you should try even to get that during in the walking meditation. More and more, you need to be familiarized with this state of mind. Because mind is fairly cultured or fairly programmed, conditioned to be with objects, entangled with objects, grasping objects. But now only we are introduced to a state where there is no grasping. Now this new state has to be further cultivated, further introduced to the mind. Now we are getting more and more familiar with that state of mind. Suppose now you are able to maintain that while in the sitting, while in the walking, while you are driving, while you are eating, etc., etc. Means now mind has fully understood that state, fully establishing that state. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that you can't see, hear, smell, taste, etc. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Can you hear now? Can't?
Now I can, yes.
Okay. So then, I mean, so actually what I want to tell is that when we are able to reach the non-grasping state of mind, so that has to be further and further cultivated, and one even has to have it even in the while walking, while sitting, while standing, while say lying down, while eating, etc., etc. So likewise, it has to be a fairly a familiar state of mind. So more and more when one is able to consolidate that, so that becomes one's nature of the mind. Now that actually builds up a lot of further wisdom, further insights are possible, because we were in a different realm, very much like we were in the grasping realm, always mind is occupied, but now one is in a different realm where the mind is not occupying, like we discuss in the Kajjaniya Sutta. So one is abandoning things rather than established on things, rather than grasping things. So when that nature becomes one's very much like the homing state, so then cleansing the mind become more natural. It could be very much like natural progressing may happen. So because we are not fueling the mind onto the defilement side, rather we are abandoning things, scattering things, not grasping things, and so the practice is continuing, but no defilements. Less and less defilements, weakening the defilements. So I hope the answer is clear. I think we can go to the next section from Upendra.
Okay, thank you, Pente. So we have a written question. The question says, when engaged in daily activities, can one have a state of mind where one does not establish consciousness on the task engaged in?
Yeah, that is... So I think these are some gradual things. So I can't say that immediately we are able to have unestablished state of mind throughout the day. Throughout the, say... whole day, that there may be situations that again mind get entangled, again mind get established. So there could be ups and downs, but more and more one practice, so mind is now motivated with non-grasping. His objective is non-grasping. So even one is doing certain activity, so mind may able to remain calm. Mind may be able to remain pure. Now, for example, now if we consider Buddha's situation, now there are certain observations made about him. So it is mentioned that while eating, so Buddha still feel all the different kind of flavors. But mind is not entangled in those flavors, even though he feel them. So that means, suppose that you are doing another activity. So you may be doing this activity, consciously you may be doing it, but mind remains calm. Mind does not lead to any conceptual proliferation. So absence of conceptual proliferation is the key thing. It is not that you are unable to do anything. You may be able to do things, but the mind's involvement is the conscious involvement. But not the thinking level involvement. Time to time, maybe volitions may happen, but that volitions also not lead into conceptual proliferation. Kind of fragments of, say, directions, how to do, what to do, etc., come into the mind, that's it. You do it, but mind remains calm. I feel so this could be the situation. I can't say completely because I am not an arahant. So I mean, according to the Dhamma, so this is what we can assume, that's what's going to happen.
Okay, alright. I'd like to invite Upendra for the next question.
Teruvan Sarnai Bhante.
Yes, Teruvan Sarnai.
I just want to share a few experience and clarify something with related to today's discussion.
Yeah.
So, Bhante, now when I start walking meditation, like not like old days, I was actually walking on a hilltop with a beautiful path. So, when I was just trying to practice walking meditation, first step when I kept there, I felt the first step, right foot touching the ground, and then my mind completely went out. So, I was trying to observe, not like other days, I didn't go. I didn't take my mind back, or I didn't go with the norm.
Yeah.
I am just observing, and meanwhile now I feel everything right under my feet. I'm just feeling the touching my fingers on the ground and the empty spaces in between likewise. And meanwhile I was walking like this, there was a one time where I was just going above, and I know still I can see myself, and suddenly at a time I saw a very beautiful pure white cloud on top of my head. And then after that I was just still walking, meditating, kind of having consciousness on the walking meditation, kind of concentration. And then suddenly what happened, my kind of head opens up, and other days it just becomes, opens like kind of a black empty space, pipers going here and there, but this time it's white. It's kind of white, gray mix sort of. But still I see some kind of clouds or layers in between that thing, but it's not clear, like can't see it clearly, it's empty. So I was just walking like this, but I felt one thing that I like so much to go away and observe. I felt that thing. And also another thing is I wanted to see the emptiness in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was trying to, still I didn't go behind it.
Mm.
I still didn't go behind it. I just still observing. Then my mind kind of pushes me, now if you can see the between these layers, if I can see the emptiness likewise like I used to be. So I was just trying to see, then my mind says no, your concentration is not powerful enough to do it. So then automatically what happened, while I was walking meditation, I felt breathing from my left nostril. It was just breathing in and breathing out, and its variations. And meanwhile things are getting darker. And then I feel kind of going in between that, inside that feeling emptiness, and with some light, again, more emptiness likewise. Now what happened after that, I was kind of, my eyes are closing now while I was doing the meditation. And now my mind was saying, oh, be careful, you might fall down from that rock, so likewise
mm-hmm.
that hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful, but still I just let it happen and wait, see what happens. So what happens, then my eyes are now completely shut down, and I'm still walking meditation. It goes two rounds here and there, but suddenly it stopped, and I just slowly opened my mind automatically, and I saw I'm keeping 2-3 steps from the edge, and then again I turned back, and it automatically happened. Then I just let it be and wait, just observe. And then after that I came to the sitting meditation. First time it was just again the same thing. Mind is going out here and there, but not that much, because with the in-breath and out-breath, it automatically just actually came to that sitting meditation, and I was observing. Then what happened at that time, at a stage, I was bending down, and likewise, and then I am again trying to straighten my back, and again trying to do the sitting meditation, and again it is bending and bending and bending, and there was no one in the temple. So I just let it happen, and I fell down
mm-hmm.
from the posture, and then again I try to fix it, and again I try to straighten my back and try to start doing it, and it is again bending, but I feel so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Then again bending, then again I went to the normal position, and again straighten my back, and again I was observing the in-breath. I feel so relaxed.
Mm.
And then next time I feel
Upendra, when you are doing it, where your mind is established, what have you taken as the object of mind?
Initially, Bhante, actually nowadays I just observe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. So what are the things coming to your observation?
Mainly, Bhante, initial stages when in the walking meditation, and I just feel the feet touching the ground or the weight going left to right likewise. Then I observe that my mind goes out and he is doing his own analysis and he's just coming back again. That thing I observe. But when I do the when I usually sit on for the sitting meditation, usually my when I observe, usually in breath and out breath I feel it, like left right nostril, it changes the in breath likewise, those things, then in between there's a gap, it becomes with short breath likewise. I just try to observe, it just observes. So I just let it happen and wait, but mind goes out sometimes. And at that time, in the walking meditation, sitting meditation, when mind goes out, even in the past few days, automatically myself goes up and just observe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually, at that time, I can see the breathing going on. On the other hand, sounds and other things and some energy particles here and there from the mind going here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, I just see things.
Yeah.
So I just let it be and wait. Like
okay.
This.
Yeah. So very much like, I mean, the mind is a little bit of excess concentration, because we need to balance. Uh-huh. Yeah. We need to balance concentration with the mindfulness. So it's better always keeping the mindfulness in the front, and keeping concentration under the purview of the mindfulness. Say you are always have kind of the concentration under control with the mindfulness. So, but on the other hand, the time to time, the concentration can take the upper hand, and then it starts to bring you to different levels, and those are some concentrated states. By the way, I mean, these things may slowly disappear, because at the beginning of the practice, while we are going through it, so the concentration, when it is so powerful, it can bring ourselves to different levels. Say, as you mentioned, very much like you perceive that you are in a far away place and you are observing things, and you may be very closer and then observing things. Likewise, different perceptions can happen when the concentration is high. By the way, I mean, while you do walking meditation, do it naturally, keep your eyes open, and closely pay attention to the various phenomena available at your soles, and what really happens to those phenomena. Say, for example, what happens to all these touching sensations, how they are coming, how they are arising, how they are changing, how they are disappearing, and what other sensations are available at the soles. So likewise, you do further investigation while you are walking, so that would be much better. That further improves the mindfulness and clear comprehension, and that is what we need to bring up. And currently it seems more than that, the concentration has taken the upper hand.
Yes. But yesterday what I did was I went through three cycles like that. And then I wanted to observe now. Was it still going and going?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay, Bhante?
You mean while sitting or while walking?
Walking, Bhante.
While walking, what happened?
Just mind again going out like that and coming back. So I was observing around 3-4 cycles like that.
Uh-huh.
And then what I did was I deliberately now waited and observed.
Uh-huh. So after that, was it able to establish on the sensations happen on your foot?
Yes, Bhante.
Okay.
When I call back, it automatically happens.
Okay.
That means
fine.
Without any problem, I can do it.
Fine. So then, then continue to do that, because this careful observation is important. So that is the place where improving clear comprehension, mindfulness, wisdom, etc. So that is the place that we need to work at the moment. So once that is fairly fulfilled, fairly improved, then mind lets go of everything and may reach another level. So till that, we need to continue this observation.
Bhante, then there's a little bit of clarification. Now, in that sutta teaching, Bhante, you mentioned now unestablished and not touching the emptiness, right?
No, 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 no. Unmanifested.
Unmanifested.
It is very much like empty. It is very much like touching the emptiness.
Emptiness, and even that is not entangled. I mean, not going behind the emptiness also, right?
No, emptiness basically have nothing, no. So nothing. There is nothing to get entangled.
So that means Bhante. That means Bhante. No canvas. That is that what we mean? Atanyata.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. But then the Atanyata, is it actually with the Sovan stage also? With the Sovan
People
also, do they have it? Or the
could be.
That's completely.
Yeah, it could be possible. Yeah, that's why. I mean, the direction of the Buddha is that to maintain Atanyata at every level. Say, even when one becomes, first Jhana, then Buddha mentioned that Atammeta Vutta Bhagavata. So there also you need to apply Atammeta. Rather than getting identified with the first Jhana, you have to keep the mind free from, have its kind of a freed mind. And even when, you go to Sotapanna, or even before that, you are practicing Vipassana. So when you are able to recognize temporary freedom of mind, that indicates that the mind is in Atammeta. So it is maintaining Atammeta. Atammeta literally means that you are not identifying with anything. And you haven't become anyone either.
Okay, Bhante.
Okay.
Right, Bhante. Right. So the same thing we can say in Nirguna Vijnana also?
Yes. Many terms are there. Yes.
Bhante. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
For everyone.
Okay. Everyone, Sanai.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
I believe that's the last question.
Okay, then we can wind up the session. I think, Jennifer, now line is clear, right?
Yes, it's very clear now.
Very clear now. I think there is something happened in the network. Now I was able to resolve it. I think I now know the problem, but anyway, time is finished. Now we'll conclude today's Dhamma discussion, Dhamma teaching. And with this, actually, we were able to accumulate some merits. Let's share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past level relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idang vo nyatinang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyatinang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyatinang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.